Hare Krishna. Here we are, it's the 26th on a Saturday, and I'm back in Budapest, sitting up in the tower, and it's a cool autumn day. I miss the nice warmth of Kazakhstan. It was really wonderful weather over there, but it seems that fall has already set in. Some of the trees' leaves are becoming brownish. I also noticed that the information for the Kazakhstan petition is up on the podcast. I'll be repeating this regularly, and I ask you all that for the next 2 weeks or so, send petitions of your own. Ask friends to send petitions to these addresses. If you can get groups of individuals to sign them, all the better. If you can get non-ISKCON affiliated bodies, some human rights organization, other Hindu mandirs, or Indian organizations in the area. What to speak of if you can get some kind of Muslim groups to sign, or to send their own. Everything is valuable. And let's not think that it has nothing to do with us. We're a large international family, and therefore we need to show our concern for what's going on elsewhere. Today I'm going to speak a little about culture. And by culture, I mean the culture of the Krishna consciousness movement, meaning the way of life of the Krishna consciousness. And interestingly, I looked it up in the dictionary, and I'll make some comment on some of the definitions of culture, which Srila Prabhupada uses very frequently. He uses the culture of Krishna consciousness as a phrase. Sometimes it refers to the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, but other the way of life of Krishna consciousness. And it was just the idea that Srila Prabhupada had that this was actually a spiritual culture. It was a spiritual way of life. Everyone has a way of life. In other words, the way that we live, which includes our art, our music, our literature, and so on. But generally that way of life is based on material values. There are certain cultures, and originally all of the cultures of the world were spiritually based. Christianity was so, even Islam is very much so at the present time, and so are other cultures, either primitive or advanced. But more or less in the balance, all cultures have now reverted to being secular and really separate from their original spiritual foundations, and they're based on hedonistic values and the consequence of that type of hedonism. Hedonism meaning enjoying sense gratification, as we usually say. And I felt it important to speak about this because very often as I travel and observe devotees, community of devotees, temples, I see that devotees often relegate Krishna consciousness to a faith or a religion which is divorced or disconnected from their way of life. And this isn't the Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada taught us. And neither is it the Krishna consciousness which will actually be successful. In reality, you cannot separate your faith and religion from your way of life. And let me just here give some of the definitions that I find in my computer dictionary, which I always use in writing, on what culture is. And they say culture, a particular set of attitudes that characterizes a group of people. Great definition. Another one, art, music, literature, and related intellectual activities. Another one, enlightenment and sophistication acquired through education and exposure to the arts. Another one, the beliefs, customs, practices, and social behavior of a particular nation or people. And the last one, a group of people whose shared beliefs and practices identify the particular place, class, or time to which they belong. Wow. Anyway, if I was to comment in detail on all of these, I'd end up writing a book. And maybe sometime I will, or someone out there should. Because Krishna consciousness was much more of a culture when I joined than it is at the present time, even though ISKCON as a society has much more assets than it does. And let me just start with this last definition which I gave. A group of people whose shared beliefs and practices identify the particular place, class, or time to which they belong. I mean, this is fantastic. We therefore need to ask, I mean, who are we identifying with? What are those shared beliefs? And beliefs are maybe a little more common, but the expression of those beliefs, the practices by which we identify with what particular place or class or time to which they belong. In other words, what group of people are we identifying with in a particular place, a particular class of people, and a particular time of people? And of course, my answer is, and I would expect that most other devotees' answer will be, is that we're identifying with Krishna's eternal associates in the spiritual world, which is an eternal time. The place is in Goloka Vrindavan, and the class of people are those who are fully surrendered to the Lord. So we're identifying with their beliefs, and we're also identifying with their practices, and that is our culture. Srila Prabhupada sometimes uses the Vedic culture, and the Vedic culture is found in the material world. It's how the spiritual world transposes or manifests its beliefs and practices here in the material world, and we call it the Vedic culture. And even there in the spiritual world, the Vedic culture, the Brahminical culture, is also in its most purest and uncorrupted form existing ad infinitum. So we're a group of people, and do we share the beliefs of the Brajbasis, the beliefs of the Dwarkavasis, the beliefs of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, the Navabhitvasis? And particularly, not only do we share their belief, because sometimes devotees say, well, yes, of course, that's what I believe. It doesn't matter what I look like or what I practice. But actually, the practices are very relevant. They're very relevant because both of these things, belief and practice, make up a culture. If you believe something, you behave in a certain way. And whereas transcendentalists like Shukadeva Goswami may believe in a certain culture, and yet they may behave in a different way, namely that they behave as if they're deaf and dumb people and they walk around naked. But that type of practice is for very extraordinary individuals under extraordinary circumstances. But the general point which we need to begin at is that actually what we believe in must be reflected in how we walk, talk. And Arjuna asks this question in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Sthita Pragyasa Kavasa Samadhi Stasya Keshava. He says, how does he walk? How does he talk? What is the practice and behavior of those who are self-realized souls? And often, unfortunately, devotees say, well, listen, just accept what's within and forget about the fact that I'm dressed like a hillbilly, which means a cowboy, or that my eating practices don't reflect those things that Srila Prabhupada taught, or that my speech and language may be those of, once again, a hillbilly, or Western, impolite, and barbaric type language culture. Just accept me for what I am within. But this is not something that neophyte devotees or even intermediate devotees or sadhakas can argue, because it is not what makes up culture, but it is what makes up the exception to the culture. And our business, both as practitioners and as preachers, is to show the lifestyle that emanates as a result of a certain type of belief. So both of these things have to run parallel. And therefore we should be very clear about what is the practices and the behavior of Krishna's eternal associates, and particularly how that has been handed down to us through Parampara and given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And then we're leading a culture. Therefore, going back to some of the other definitions, art. What type of art do we favor? Well, obviously, we favor that art which reflects our philosophy, changing bodies, our relationship with Krishna, Krishna's rasa dance, Krishna's embracing the cows, so many beautiful pictures which are found in our books. We don't favor the art of modern culture, because the art of modern culture, especially modern culture, has behind it the hedonistic belief and lifestyle that I mentioned earlier. Sometime this year I was speaking with one devotee who was looking at what type of career that he should do, and I was encouraging that he should join our art studio in New Brajadam. But he was going to university in order to, or college, in order to study art, and he was going to become an art restorer. And I asked him, but what does art restore mean? That means you're going to be spending 95% of your time restoring naked women, or, by that I mean pictures of naked women, or other types of materialistic paintings which have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, and you have to be really absorbed in that as well. Why do you want to be absorbed in that type of activity, and why do you want to participate in that type of art? And then, of course, music. Our whole Krishna consciousness movement is based on chanting and dancing, which is all in relationship to music. When we hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic Sankirtan, when we hear about Krishna's Rasa Lila with the gopis, this is all based on music. Music permeates Krishna's meal. There's music in the background. When Krishna entertains himself with the cowherd boys, they dance and sing even while tending cows. And therefore, isn't it amazing that devotees listen to karmi music, that they listen to either karmi classical music, or they listen to rock and roll or whatever other types of music as a form of entertainment, which it's certainly a uncultured form of entertainment. It's a form of entertainment which is not related to Krishna consciousness, and certainly doesn't help one in terms of their belief system. So activities affects our belief, and our beliefs are consequence of our activities. If I hear things which are not conducive or not related to my beliefs, my belief or my faith will actually decrease. And not even just karmi music, but of course we have so many Krishna conscious songs, bhajans, Hare Krishna mantras, which are put to modern type of music. And while that may have some value for preaching, for bringing people to Krishna consciousness, or for making a bridge between the non-devotee and devotee lifestyle, it's certainly not something that serious sadhakas listen to, because the nature of, what do I know, hard rock or heavy metal is passion and ignorance, and it's not conducive to the mode of goodness which is beneficial for thinking about Krishna. I doubt that when people listen to that type of music, even though they may say, well, it's Krishna's energy, that they think about Krishna. It's just completely detrimental for thinking about that. And then what to speak of literature, art, music, literature, reading books, where Srila Prabhupada was very strict about us reading other things other than his books, what to speak of outside of Krishna conscious topics or Shastra. Devotees very often, for no real serious reason, read all types of other books in order to become educated, in order to broaden their vision on culture, on psychology, on the way people think, on knowing how to speak, on management, on so many things. And whereas sometimes in certain isolated instances these things may be necessary, either for making one's living in the material world, and you can't just base that on Srila Prabhupada's books if you're going to be an engineer or an architect, and perhaps for some things which assist one in preaching Krishna consciousness. But very often devotees read other books by means of a form of entertainment. I had to explain to a second initiated devotee lady why it wasn't good for her to read karmi romantic novels, even though they inspired her and she felt fulfilled her need for some emotional rasa. And of course here also described enlightenment and sophistication acquired through education and exposure to the arts. So the type of culture, the type of education that we're exposed to, one becomes thus sophisticated. The prime example of a sophisticated person was Srila Prabhupada, who every motion of his hand, how he spoke, his gestures, his method of communication was so sophisticated. And it was so because it was an expression of his love for Krishna and his identifying with Krishna. In other words, Krishna, literally speaking, manifests himself through Srila Prabhupada. So if our belief, if our Krishna consciousness is very strong, then a devotee will manifest those things not only as a matter of practice, but as a perfected person, then his mudras, his talking, his looking, everything will manifest Krishna consciousness, or his consciousness, his behavior will be a manifestation of Krishna's method of moving and walking and talking. And that's called being Tadatma, or being one with Krishna. And this is what we want to do. Therefore, for instance, nowadays when I see that it's very stylish for ladies to have ponytails, which is certainly better than some other type of hairstyle, I always ask myself, but why would someone want to wear a ponytail? The gopis don't wear ponytails. Mother Jashoda doesn't wear ponytails. They braid their hair. So if we're representing a culture, then why would we want to do anything else other than represent what they do, braid our hair? Who cares what's current in the modern cultural trends, which are constantly changing? Why would we want to wear black leather pants and skirt when Krishna wears dhotis, when gopis wear dhotis, or gopis wear dhotis when they appear as men in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela? Or why would men not want to wear sikas? Even if they work, one can always have a small sika. Nowadays, it's very trendish for men to have bald heads. To have a little sika on top of that is certainly not going to cost anyone their job. And of course, how we dress, it's often difficult to convince full-time devotees who live in temples to wear devotee clothes when they walk outside of the temple. But even our devotees who are working outside, what culture do they identify with? Do they identify with the jean culture and the miniskirt culture? Or do they wear gentlemen clothes when they're working, but as soon as they come home, do they dress in sari and put on tilak and once again reflect for themselves, their family, their children, the spiritual culture of the spiritual world, always wearing tilak? And I could go on and on about so many other things, the customs, practices, social behavior, the type of sports that we play, the type of association that we keep, the type of recreation that we believe in. But we should always come back and ask ourselves, which is the group of people whose shared beliefs, practices, identify the particular place, class, or time to which we belong? And if we're talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, then we should consider about the place, class, and time which is reflected within our own beliefs and our own practices at the present time. Our beliefs, I think, are much more solidly maintained than our practices, but our practices are certainly waning, and if we let them wane, it will also influence our belief system as well. So let's somehow or another try to fortify and strengthen our culture of Krishna consciousness, and in our walking, talking, sleeping, the way we eat, how we don't use instruments, the kind of foods that we eat, that we're not pizza and pasta people. That's for a different class of people at a different time, but that actually we're rice, dal, sabji, and sweets like rasgulla, gulab jamun, etc., not chocolate people, because that reflects, again, a different type of culture. We try to reanalyze, reassess how it is that we are living, how it is that we are behaving, what is it that we are representing, and if it doesn't represent Goloka Vrindavan, Navadvip, if it doesn't represent the Brijbasis, the Navadvip Bahasis, if it doesn't represent Sanatan Dharma and what's going on eternally in the spiritual world, then if we're serious about Krishna consciousness, we should readjust our habits and ensure that we're representing the real cultural values that Srila Prabhupada gave us. Hare Krishna.